Good morning, and welcome to Sports Interview with Anne Liguori on this Saturday morning, May 9. Sports Interview, our weekly gathering of getting to know personalities in the world of sport and beyond, about their success stories, their opinions on a variety of issues, just so much. It's every week's a little different, right? For those of you who tune in regularly, it's always a little different take with different personalities in sports, Hollywood, music, business. You know, you get the picture. Anyway, you can hear us from anywhere every Saturday morning from 9 to 10 Eastern. You can tune in online at 883wppb.org. It's archived on my website at annliguori.com. And each show is turned into a podcast, and you can find that and listen to it at your leisure. All right, well, this morning, I have a treat for you. I recently caught up with one of the most inspirational athletes of all time, and he's 84 years young. He's won 163 golf tournaments on six continents in over seven decades. And he was inducted into the World Golf Hall of Fame back in 1974. He's the winner of nine major titles on the regular tour, nine major titles on the Champions Tour, and he's the only non-American to win all four majors in a career, the career Grand Slam. He is the great Gary Player. I'm sure some of you have guessed it by now. And he's one of five players in the history of golf to have won the career Grand Slam, joining Gene Sarazen, Ben Hogan, Jack Nicklaus, and Tiger as the only five players who have won all four majors. He's one of the greatest ambassadors for the sport of golf. And this morning you'll hear him get on his soapbox about a variety of subjects, and you'll indeed see how very passionate he is about fitness and doing your best. You know, during this pandemic, the most important thing I think is, you know, obviously to stay healthy. And part of staying healthy is to stay active and to exercise every day, whether you run, whether you bike, whether you go for long walks. You know, golf is a great sport for social distancing, and you can play golf now and at a lot of the courses carrying your own bag or one to a cart. And so I really recommend, you know, daily exercise as a stress release, and obviously with all the fitness benefits. And Gary Player, I think he does 100 sit-ups a day. He works out every day. 84 years young, he's in such great shape. And he's doing so much. You know, he has a huge company. It's called Black Knight International. It includes his golf course design company. He's designed more than 400 golf courses on five continents throughout the world. He's authored or co-written over 36 golf books. He has his real estate company. He has his foundation doing great things all over the world. And, he's called the Black Knight. He loves wearing black during competition, and just really has a lot going on with licensing projects, events, publishing, wine, apparel, memorabilia. And he does a lot of interviews promoting the importance of wellness and good nutrition and regular exercise. So he is my kind of guy, and you will hear Gary Player in the second half of the show. In the first half of the show, I had a conversation with former heavyweight contender Jerry Cooney. What a great personality, and so charitable. Jerry is one of the most charitable athletes that I know. We're good friends. We see each other under normal circumstances at different celebrity golf tournaments. We're in different functions where I have a chance to catch up with him. He grew up right here on Long Island in Huntington. And he's led a fascinating life, a life full of ups and downs. And he wrote a book about it called Gentleman Jerry, A Contender in the Ring, A Champion in Recovery, which chronicles his career, the challenges and triumphs of a trauma survivor, and an alcoholic's journey to recovery. So he gets very personal in this book and talks about how he overcame an abusive childhood. His father was very abusive, and how he's a recovered alcoholic. And he really talks about all this to help people. And so I think you'll enjoy my conversation in this first half of the show with Jerry Cooney. But first, let's look at some of the top sports stories of the week. The National Football League came out with a schedule on Thursday. The Kansas City Chiefs will open their defense of their Super Bowl championship on September 10 when they host Houston. Tom Brady, now with the Tampa Bay Bucs, as all of you know, he will face Drew Brees in New Orleans on September 13th, the first matchup in NFL history of two quarterbacks over the age of 40, proving once again that age is all relative if you take care of yourself. The Bucs and their star Tom Brady are scheduled to make five primetime appearances between weeks 5 and 12 on the schedule. And Fox Television has five of Tampa Bay's first six games, including its first primetime game on Thursday, October 8th, ooh, my birthday, in Chicago. SoFi Stadium in Los Angeles will host the Rams against the Cowboys. Allegiant Stadium in Las Vegas, a couple of new stadiums, will debut on Monday night, September 21st, with the Raiders taking on Drew Brees and the Saints. And NFL Commissioner Roger Goodell has said that the league is planning for a normal season, but obviously is making contingency plans. Of course, this whole schedule is all tentative given the current pandemic. So it's exciting to see the schedule. Hopefully things will be somewhat back to normal. And we'll see what happens as far as spectators go with the NFL games. Meanwhile, in Canada, bad news for the Canadian Football League. Who most likely will have to cancel their season altogether because of the coronavirus pandemic. Commissioner Randy Ambrosi said the league's future is very much in jeopardy as their teams collectively lost about $20 million last year. He said that their brand is not a wealthy business, and unlike the NFL, he said their biggest source of revenue is not television, but it's ticket sales. So obviously with no spectators, that's going to be very tough. They are looking for a partnership of some kind with the Canadian government. Boy, that's too bad. Hopefully they can come up with some solution to save the Canadian Football League. In golf, on May 17th, a $3 million charity skins match benefiting COVID-19 relief will take place at prestigious Seminole Golf Club in Juneau Beach, Florida. And the match will feature Rory McIlroy, current world number one, and Dustin Johnson, former number one, against Oklahoma State alums Ricky Fowler and Matthew Wolf. Now, the event is billed as tailor-made driving relief. Very clever tailor-made in terms of marketing and getting your name out there. And they had a lot to do with putting this match together, which will be televised by NBC and the Golf Channel. So good for them. United Health Group is backing the $3 million donation. McIlroy and DJ are playing for the American Nurses Federation, and Fowler and Wolf are playing for the CDC Foundation. So this is a great idea. Everybody is starving for some exciting sports on TV, and it will be the first live golf event since the pandemic shut down sports 7 weeks ago. And it will be the first time that Seminole, a very prestigious private course in Southeast Florida, it's a Donald Ross treasure. It's the first time that they will be hosting an event that's going to be televised. So it should be real exciting. And of course, the match will follow strict social distancing guidelines from the CDC and local orders, and they will use appropriate testing to protect the health of the players, the production crew, and others on site. And no spectators will be allowed. So this will take place next Sunday on NBC and the Golf Channel in the afternoon. And not to be outdone, of course, the week after that, on Sunday, May 24th, at Medalist Golf Club in Jupiter, Florida, Turner Sports will broadcast The Match, Champions for Charity. Now, The Match will feature Tiger Woods and Peyton Manning against Phil Mickelson and Tom Brady. The format will be better ball on the front nine and a modified alternate shot on the back nine, meaning both players will hit their tee shots and then they will take turns hitting from there, which can be a very tricky format. But it should be fun to see these guys, Tiger Woods and Peyton Manning, against Phil Mickelson and Tom Brady, two of the biggest stars in golf and the NFL. And it all will be simulcast at 3 p.m. on May 24th. On TNT, TBS, True TV, and HLN, with pre-match coverage on Bleacher Report app. Warner Media and the four players will make a charitable donation of $10 million to various relief efforts locally and nationally. So all that is good news. Golf is, you know, with its really huge area, you know, terrain-wise, you know, it's one of the sports where you can really social distance. The players don't have to be near each other. They may carry their own bags or they may have a caddy. They don't have to be near each other. And of course, you know, golf courses use, they took care of the rakes weeks ago, months ago, and they put styrofoam in the cups of the hole. So you don't have to touch the pin. The pin stays in the hole. The only thing you touch is your ball when you're taking it out of the hole. So golf really, could be and should be at the forefront of sports that you can play. Many are playing in Florida and now all over the country as most states have opened up their golf courses with specific rules. I know in New York, the clubhouses are not open. In Florida, the clubhouses are open, but, you know, they have strict rules as to how many people can be in a clubhouse at a time. And the restaurants in Florida are open, and they have strict rules as to how many people you can have capacity-wise. So state by state, you know, we're starting to open up a little bit, and golf is one of those sports that can set the trend for safety. Sports Interview with Anne Liguori is brought to you by Dune Jewelry and my Hamptons Rope Collection. Savor the memories with sand from your favorite beach or golf course and timeless pieces for men and women. Dune, that's D-U-N-E, jewelry.com. And by Peak Vision Sunglasses, zero distortion, unmatched clarity. Change your game. Peak Vision, that's P-E-A-K, vision.com. Welcome back to Sports Interview with Anne Liguori. So glad you can join me where I am every Saturday morning from 9 to 10 Eastern Standard Time. And you can hear us from anywhere online at 883wppb.org, on podcasts, and each show is archived at annliguori.com. And joining me now is longtime buddy, one of the most charitable people on the planet, and now co-author with John Grady of his story. The book is called Gentleman Jerry, A Contender in the Ring, A Champion in Recovery. Good morning, Jerry Cooney. So glad to have you on Sports Interview. How are you?
And I got to tell you, you sound so great, so uplifting, and it's great to be on with you. And I'm doing well. I'm out in California, so it's a little, 3 hours earlier here. But we're having a great time. There's a very big fight tonight with Errol Spence and Shawnee Showtime Porter. And David Benavidez and Anthony Durrell. So it's exciting out here because I'm with my peeps. You know what I mean? I'm with my people, and the atmosphere is exciting, and it's going to be a great night tonight. And I'm so glad to be out here with my guys, and I'm so glad I'm still in the fight game.
You are in the fight game, my friend, and I want to preview this fight. Let's get back to that in a minute, and I really appreciate you getting up early because I know you're on the West Coast. But
no,
you know,
don't be silly. Are you kidding?
It's so great that you are in your game, and you know, you continue to thrive in the boxing world, and you know, it's not easy to do that. You know, a lot of former boxers, you never hear from them again. But what's the key to, what do you think the key was for you? I mean, this obviously you got this opportunity on Sirius Radio, you and Randy Gordon hosting a weekly show. You're going to all these fights. So it must be a dream come true for you to be able to continue working in this world that you love so much.
Yeah. And I get to follow it and I tell people about it. You see, it was boxing was great back in my era when we were fighting with Holmes and there's so many Norton, there's so many great fighters. And then kind of, you know, Don King kind of, in my opinion, raped and robbed the game so much that a lot of the people that would have became fighters left the game and went to play football, baseball, and basketball, other sports, and kind of boxing fell down for a while. And MMA came out and took over. We are back and so strong. And yeah, the thing for me was I believe that because I was a big puncher, I didn't get all the wear and tear. I mean, I lost a couple of fights, but basically, I was a big puncher, so I never had to go the distance. I never had to keep taking that pounding all the time. And I think it kept me alive. And I was smart enough to know that there was a rainy day coming, and I wanted to hold on to my money. And I protected myself. And listen, I'm so excited about my world right now. It's exciting to meet all these new people, and you know what we do. And we go around, we help people, and we hang around with our celebrity friends, and we rub elbows, and we hear about their stories. We hear about their aches and pains, and how life is treating them. And man, we are so lucky. You and I too. I mean, listen. You got a great life. I mean, I'm excited for you. I love to hear what's going on for you. I love people always telling me about Ann LaGorie. I'm always hearing about Ann LaGorie. So, listen, this is what we do. You know, we have a nice set of people, and we're helping other people. And how can you go wrong with that?
That's right. That's right. You're so charitable, Jerry. You've been able to really spread the love, and as you say, you've done so much to give back to your sport. You wrote a lot about, you know, your childhood and what you had to overcome as a youth. So you have a lot of empathy for people who had it very, very tough. You had an abusive father. He was an alcoholic. You became an alcoholic. How tough was it, you know, in this book to really open up and talk about your youth and your abusive dad?
You know, and it was very healing on one sense. And the other sense, it's always painful showing yourself. But listen, until you show yourself, you're never going to be free. And I want to be free. You know, my brother passed away a couple of years ago, my younger brother, and he never got to really experience life. And so when that happened to me, I thought to myself, you know, we're always telling ourselves, well, next year I'm going to take that trip. Next year I'm going to do that project. And you really realize that we have today. And I want to grab life today, and part of grabbing life is letting other kids and adults know that there's another way, and we can take ourselves out of that box and experience life in an exciting way.
And people relate to you because you've been through it, and as you say, talking about it was very healing, and it really made you tough, Jerry. I mean, your childhood, as difficult as it was, really made you tough physically and mentally.
You know, Anne, in the book, I'm so glad you're bringing this up, that it's amazing that from where I came from, you know, I was told you're no good, you're a failure, you're not going to amount to anything, to making it to fight for the heavyweight championship of the world is unbelievable. And I never looked at it before, but listen, we keep kicking and scratching, and we want to fight to get to what we deserve. And although that road I took, although it was hard at times, I made it through, and I came out of the darkness. And man, I'll tell you what, for my whole life, I get to share that with people and let them know that there is hope. And you have to keep asking the question, can you help me? Can you help me? But, you know, that's the sad part of the book. The great part of the book is all the people I've made and the places I've been and the fights I got an opportunity to be in. And man, I'll tell you what, I am so proud of where I came from, out where you are in Long Island, and the people that helped raise me.
That's right. You grew up in Huntington. You went to Walt Whitman High School. Tell me this story about sparring with a high school football coach. That sounded like an interesting story.
Well, that's a great story. You know, I had this football coach who was kind of a bully. He thought he was a tough guy all the time. And when I used to carry my, you know, it's really funny, but I used to carry my gloves with me because I'd box at the school stop, at the bus stop. I'd get there early and I'd box whoever was at the book stop, the bus stop. So one day I had him in school, and he said to me, why don't you bring the gloves back? I said, it's funny, I got him right here. So in front of the whole gym class, we put the gloves on, and I smacked him around. And it was, you know, it's like, you know, the bully. I always loved to handle the bullies because the bullies pushed their weight around. They thought they could make people do what they want. And to me, he was a bully. And so I got to smack him around, and he took him off, and I never had another bad day with him because he never bothered me anymore.
I'm sure you were the school hero at that point. But were you as tall? I know you're 6'6". You towered over most of your opponents. But back in high school, were you that pretty much really taller than everybody else at that point, or no?
Well, when I was 16, I was 6'4", 160 pounds. So you could whip me. You had to whip me down a senior, but I was always a good buncher. And that's when I went into the Golden Gloves, and when I was 16 in Madison Square Garden, I fought in front of 21,000 people in the finals, and I knocked my I was a 9-1 underdog in the finals, and I knocked the guy out in the second or third round and won the middleweight championship.
And that gave you so much confidence that you really needed, particularly at that point, because, you know, with the abusive household, you were, you know, you didn't have as much self-confidence, right?
No.
And in 1973, you go to the Garden in front of all these people, and who presents you the trophy? But none other than the legendary Jack Dempsey.
Listen to you,
right?
What was that like?
Because you idolized this guy, obviously.
I did idolize that guy because he was boxing, and I got Fighter of the Year with Johnny Turner, who was also he's from Brooklyn. And we got to spend an hour or so with Jack Dempsey. And so, you know, for a little kid, for me, especially where I came from, I didn't really feel that excitement. But when I got out and got into the world, guys like Jack Dempsey helped me to keep the fight going, to keep trying, to keep moving forward. And that's all we can do. And so that was a great experience for me. Another one that gave me a boost to tell myself I can make it to the next level.
And then from there, talk about your career. Right after the Golden Gloves, what was next for you?
Well, what was so great for me was I wasn't crazy about my management, but one thing that they did and that I knew is they signed Howard Davis. Now, I don't know, I think you remember Howard Davis. He was a gold medal winner in 1976 from Glen Cove. His mother was sick and was dying during the Olympics. She wanted him to stay. He stayed. He won the gold medal. He won the best fighter of the Olympics that year. And he got signed by the guys that was managing me. So I knew that I was going to be showcased on all his cards. So that was one of the reasons why I took that management promotion, because I wanted to grow. I wanted to be seen. I wanted to be showcased. And signing with them helped me do that. And I, you know, went on about my career, and, you know, I love Long Island. I mean, listen, I used to run down the street, and the garbage trucks and the people would be, you know, it was the greatest feeling. You'd beep in the horn because I was like the Rocky on Long Island at that time.
Really? You were. I mean, maybe you were the inspiration for the series. Who knows? But
that was Chuck Wepner, who's a very good friend of mine.
Yeah.
Who's very sick and. Prayers for me. He was the Rocky guy, but I became friends with all the people from the towns and the recreation, and so I got to develop the following. And listen, life, this the fight of life. Everybody's got to work one, two jobs a day. They got to hurry up home. They got to hustle. They got to pay their bills. So I was kind of like, you know, I love the Jets coming up. When every Sunday, if the Jets won, I felt like $1 million. So I became that for some people, that life is a struggle. And I loved that feeling because I wanted to help people, because where I came from, I had no help. I had to find my own way. And so it just, everything and everybody fed each other. And it was a great experience.
Looking back at your career, Jerry, the wins, the losses, you know, Ken Norton, Michael Spinks, George Foreman. I mean, you were, as you say, fighting in a world when the heavyweight division was everything. I covered a lot of boxing years ago. You know, Evander Holyfield,
yes.
Tyson, George Foreman, the latter days of Foreman. What sticks out most in your mind, you know, the wins or the losses?
You know what? I'm going to tell you something. I got the night I knocked out Ken Norton in Madison Square Garden. I mean, this is in the book. I got scared, I guess. You know, that information my father gave me all those years, the pressure got on me, and I went to drinking, and I lost attention. I lost my focus, and that was the end of my career that night. Little did I know. So, you know, listen. I love the fights. I love the people. I mean, I was with Frank Sinatra, with Bob Hope, Dean Martin, Sammy Davis Jr. I mean, you can't believe back in those days the people that we saw while we were in Vegas all the time. And so those experiences, the fights I was in, the fighting, you know, Larry Holmes and getting dropped in the second round and being on one knee and saying to myself in front of 35,000 people, saying, what the hell are you doing here? But I got up and fought back. You know, and I fought back. I backed him up. I pushed him. Knocking out Kenny Norton, Jimmy Young, Ron Lyle. There's so many great experiences that life offers us. But in the moment, I never really allowed myself to feel those feelings because I felt that if I felt them, they'd be taken away from me. And that's part of growing up in a dysfunctional, abusive household. And so by making this process and writing this book with John Grady, who's a great guy, it kind of helped me to really enjoy that part of my life that I never allowed myself to feel. So, man, I tell you what. Listen, I was in a war. I was in this experience that is so great and so high, and the high notes were high and the low notes were low. But we got through them, and I picked myself up off the floor and I dusted off my pants and I moved on. And that's a great story for people because we all struggle with that. We all struggle with trying to get to where we're going. We don't know how to get there, but we keep trying. And this book is all about that.
We're talking to Jerry Cooney, former boxer who emerged as the number one contender for the heavyweight championship of the world. And he co-wrote it with John Grady, who you mentioned, who actually is a licensed professional counselor, a licensed alcohol and drug counselor, certified in mental health and addiction. So it's a book really not only obviously about your boxing career, but really more about what you had to overcome as a victim of abuse and as an alcoholic and coming from, you know, this environment where, as you say, it was like a war almost every day. So many people can, you know, you probably touch so many people on a day-to-day basis, Jerry, because, you know, a part of your life has to touch the majority of people out there who are saying, man, this guy brings me hope. This guy brings me inspiration. Look what he's done with his life. I can kind of get out of all these obstacles that I'm suffering too, right? I mean, don't you feel that there's a part of this book that must touch so many people in the world?
Yeah, and thank you. And, you know, yes, the healing, listen, I have to jump over the hurdle and I have to have the courage to stand in the room alone and figure out what I'm going to do and where am I going and then move forward. And in time, we don't stand still so long in that room. We move on and we move on and we move on. And you know, my God puts those people in my life that help me to have the strength to and the courage to move forward and to let somebody know about my blemishes and that I'm not so tough and that I'm scared. And then we get over that hurdle and then we move forward. And that's life. And that's the struggle and that's the hope and the love that we grow to have. And I was blessed to have those people touch me in those moments because I was available. And I said, yeah, I want more. I want to reach for the sky. I want to jump over this fence. I want to have those things that I'm supposed to have. And it's hard work. We have to struggle. We don't have to do it alone. And wow, I tell you what, it's been the greatest experience. I feel so happy to be on with you. You're so uplifting yourself. And these are the people that we're drawn to now. We're not drawn to the, let me knock the wind out of me and sit down on the floor for a while. I want to keep moving forward because life is short for all of us.
That's right. Well, who was the most positive influence in your life, looking back?
Oh, I had so many people. My trainer, Victor Valley. I think about this guy, Ray Noon, who I met in Florida. He was a retired cop. And just, you know what? Listen, I when you do the right thing happens.
That's right.
When you do the next right thing, that person comes into your life and you share it. I used to feel bad because I had a lot of female relationships. So I care and love these women so much, but I wasn't available to be in a relationship. And I tried and I wanted to be, but when it first got to be about love and, you know, marriage, I shut down because my experience of those things were terrible. And I hurt some relationships and I tried to make amends. And those are big experiences that people need to know about that, you know, I stayed in relationships way too long because I didn't want to hurt their feelings. And in doing it, you know, we all stayed stuck for so long. So there's a lot of stuff in the book that, you know, people are going to be able to experience, understand, and relate to. And I do. And I just gave it out. I threw it on the table. And we wrote it down in the book.
It's all out there, baby. And now you and your wife, Jennifer, have been married 25 years. You have a son and a daughter, right?
I have two sons. I have a 30-year-old son from a different relationship.
Right.
And we have two children, Jennifer and I. Christopher is my older relationship. He's a great kid. He works for a bank. Jackson's got in his fourth year of Lehigh University. And my daughter, Sarah, started Rutgers this year. So we have an empty nest, and we're enjoying that. And we'll get to travel and do things and come home to an empty house. And it's another change. It's another opportunity to grow.
And talk a little bit about your radio show, Jerry. You and Randy Gordon, Randy, who I've known forever.
Yes.
Talk about a great personality. I mean, you can't beat his personality, right?
You know, and I wish you could have been with me yesterday out here. We did a show. You know, we have Radio Row out here. The big fight's taking place out here in California. And so we got to talk to all these great champions, you know, Abner Morris, names can't come to now, but all great fighters and great champions talking about their lives and their experiences. And so, we get to hear the hope and the joy and the fight in people. That's what we got to have, the fight. We got to have the fight in us, and we have to be directed. And of course, Randy's the funniest guy, and he's got so much experience. We went out to dinner last night to a great restaurant here with Kevin Ioli. He's a great writer. And the stories that we talked about for 2.5 hours between myself, Kevin Ioli, and Randy Gordon were just phenomenal. I told him we should have taped this. We could have made a book out of it.
Well, you have many, many books, I'm sure, in your head. And, you know, who I really do miss in the fight game, Jerry, is Bird Sugar. He was such a personality, always supported my projects and any events that I asked him to come to. Don't you miss Bird Sugar? May he rest in peace.
Sugar,
what a personality in the sport, right?
He knew everything about the game. He had an office in a bar. Randy Gordon worked for him for Ring Magazine in a bar. When you said that, one person, I also knew you were very friendly with Muhammad Ali.
Sure.
And he's a guy that I really miss. Joe Frazier, so many guys, Carmen Basilio. Listen, they went on and they're up with God right now. And that's when you look up in the dictionary of boxing, those are the pictures you see. And we were so lucky to rub elbows with those guys. And Muhammad Ali used to call my mother and tell her, it's going to be okay, I'm going to make it. And there was a big race with me and Larry Holmes. He came out and said that I'm not the white hope, I'm the right hope. And those kinds of moments that really hold America together and the world together, that was like life itself. And so I know you spent a lot of time with all those people, because I also followed you all these years. And you were in the thick of everything too, and so.
Well, you know, when you talk about the most prolific personality in sport, Muhammad Ali has to be at the top of that list. So in your sport of boxing, you're talking about a guy that transcended boxing and just became just such an influence around the world, Muhammad Ali. I'll never forget the luncheon I had with him, sitting next to him at Mickey Mantle's restaurant. It was, he's at that point, it had to have been maybe in the mid-90s. He couldn't really communicate that well because of the Parkinson's disease.
Yes.
But he spoke with his eyes, you know, and it was just what a couple hours I had just spending time with him. I felt like we communicated, even though he couldn't talk that well at that point.
That was so sad. That was so sad because, he saw Joe Louis and he thought he never wanted to become like that. But he loved the attention. He loved the game so much. He was a warrior. And when the war was over, he had nothing. So he kept fighting. And the problem was that, he talked early on about how well he could take a shot or you couldn't hit him. And then at the end, he was taking those shots. And we found out since then that, through football and other contact sports, that those mental problems happen from the brain. And I remember seeing him walking down the in the airport, and he had a glow to him. And so many great moments with him, being in the ring with him, talking, fooling around with him. So, listen, we have those great moments, and people can remember those moments. But, Ann, when I hear your voice, I smile for the life you bring to this world and what you do. And when we do the Head Injury Association, and whenever I see you, I mean, you're so positive, and that's what the world needs more of, and that's what I try and be like. I try to be like you and people like that to let people know, listen, there's a lot of love in this world, and we got to help each other sometimes. And that's what my book is about, and that the end is a success, and that we make it, and we make it. And that's what really life is about. And so, I mean, that's why I'm so glad to be on with you this morning, because that's my life. And did I make mistakes? Did I hurt people sometimes? Yes. I tried to make them things right. And when things I couldn't do right, I play it forward today in helping other people. So that's what we do.
And it's really a true testament to, you know, your determination and courage and willpower to overcome the many obstacles that you endured as a child. And now you're thriving in the world that you love. Let's quickly talk about the fight tonight, the IBF Welterweight Championship. You got the major favorite, Spence versus Porter, who's the underdog from my neck of the woods. I grew up in Ohio. Porter's from Ohio. How do you see that fight going tonight, Jerry, at the Staples Center?
Well, I want to tell you something. I'm a very big fan of Sean Showtime Porter. And Errol Spence, believe it or not, I don't know if your listeners know, he was born in Long Island. And then at an early age, he moved out to Texas. So he's a New Yorker from Long Island.
Wow.
One of us. And he is a beast. He was in the Olympics. He didn't win the gold medal, but back then they said he's going to be the fighter to watch. And he's in with a guy by the name of Sean Porter, who's in great shape. I think he lacks a little bit the skills like Errol Spence has. So, listen, I hate to make a prediction, but that's my business. That's what I do. So I have to tell you, it's going to be a great fight. Tune in. It's on Fox. Or pay-per-view, and I have to think it's going to go 8 and 9 and 10 rounds, and I think that Errol Spence will get the best of Sean Porter. Unfortunately, I love that guy, and he's been a great personality in and out of the game. And the other fight is Anthony Durrell is fighting a guy by the name of David Benavidez, who's a fantastic 168-pounder, and who wants to move up to light heavyweight. Light heavyweight is the toughest division in boxing right now. So we're going to see two great fights. And my opinion is I think Durrell and Benavidez is going to steal the show tonight, the Senate's final fight. But these guys are four great fighters, and they're working hard to be the best. And you cannot knock these guys for anything. They're throwback fighters from the old days.
So the super middleweight title bout you think is going to be the one to watch. And, you know, as I said, when I was covering boxing, it was really all about the heavyweight division. Do you miss those personalities? And is boxing as healthy as it once was in just different divisions now?
You know, I miss fighting. I wish I was fighting now and knew what I know now fighting. But, you know, the heavyweight division is great. We've got 6 or 8 guys that are great fighters in the heavyweight division. Plus, we got like 3 or 4 or 5 younger kids coming up that are great talents. So, you know, yes, boxing, in order for boxing to be held up, you used to have to be a heavyweight division. Now it's the welterweight, the lightweight. I mean, Lomachenko, you got the light heavyweight division are fantastic. So, listen, I tell people all the time, on your computer page, put on Boxing Scene or ESPN Boxing and look at a couple of the stories once or twice a week, and start to follow it again. It's back on regular mainstream television, so people can watch it. And it is fantastic, a fantastic game. And I just love it. And listen, Long Island's had some great fighters. Chris Algieri, the Jewish Hammer. You know, we got a lot of great fighters from out there that fight. So, and listen, we're passing through here. I want to tell people, we're not here forever. We're here for a short time. Live, experience, love. You know, I, I keep wanting to be more intimate with my wife. I want to learn how to do those things instead of being busy with life too much, you know?
We continue to learn as we get older, right? We keep trying until we get it right.
Yeah.
One of the things people always meet,
they always want to fight with me, and I always tell them, listen, don't worry, we'll fight. Don't worry about a headgear, I tell them, because it's not going to last that long. So I still got a little bit of fight in me, and listen, we just keep passing each other around.
You have a lot of fight in you, and it's so great to hear your enthusiasm. It's contagious. Good luck with continued success with the book, Gentleman Jerry, A Contender in the Ring, A Champion in Recovery. Enjoy the fight tonight, and Jerry, you know how much I enjoy your friendship through the years, and really, really appreciate you coming on the show this morning.
Listen, Ann, I always love you. You hear me?
Thank you.
I always love you.
I love you too, my friend. I love you too.
Thank you, my dear.
All right. Have a great day. Take care. Sports Interview with Ann LaGoria is brought to you in part by Dune Jewelry and my Hamptons Rope Collection. Savor the memories with sand from your favorite beach or golf course and timeless pieces for men and women. Go to DuneJewelry.com. And by Peak Vision Sunglasses, PEAK Vision Sunglasses, zero distortion, unmatched clarity. Change your game. PeakVision.com. Come closer to come and take me away. And I can feel my heart skip every time that I slip. I wanna run away. Well, welcome back. Gory and Gary Player, winner of 9 major titles on the regular tour, 9 major titles on the senior tour. He is the only non-American to win all 4 majors in a career, the career Grand Slam. He's only one of 5 players in the history of golf to have won that career Grand Slam, joining Tiger, Jack Nicklaus, Ben Hogan, Gene Sarazen as the only players to have won all 4 majors. He's won 163 tournaments on 6 continents, a Hall of Famer. I could go on and on and on, Gary. Welcome to Talking Golf. It's such a pleasure to talk with you.
Thank you, Ann. I wish we were teeing off on the first tee this morning.
I know. So what have you been doing?
Well, Ann, I'm very lucky indeed. My daughter here, we came from South Africa to see our grandson who'd just done a 2-year mission for his church in Spain. And he arrived. Luckily, the next day they were stopping the airlines from coming in. And then we were locked down here, which actually has been a wonderful time for us to be able to spend time. You know, I have 6 children. We have 22 grandchildren and 2 great-grandchildren, and they're all over the world. We got 15 American grandchildren and 3 children that are USA citizens. So we're all over the world, and so we don't ever spend a lot of time with them. And now we've had 6 weeks with them, wonderful conversations at night on all different conversations from religion to politics and education, et cetera, et cetera. And she has a forest right next to her house. So we go in magnificent walks with this great oxygen. And, you know, not enough emphasis is put on deep breathing and non-polluted areas for our health. And she has a gymnasium. And our next-door neighbor has a simulator where I can hit some balls, because I've never had 6 weeks in my entire golfing career, which is 70 years, I've never had 6 weeks when I never played golf.
I was just going to ask you, and you're keeping up your weight lifting regimen and your good diet?
I am, very much so, very much so, and I'm reading some fascinating books, and I want to write a book on longevity and health, because it's one of my favorite things. I started weight training on the tour with a man called Frank Stranahan in 1953, which is a long time ago, and I've kept it up. And, you know, I took a lot of flack about weight training, and it was bad for golf, but it certainly stood me in good stead. Look what it's done for Tiger. Look what it's done for Rory. Look what it's done for Dustin Johnson and Koepka. So we're going into an era now when people will be so strong They'll be hitting the ball 400 yards consistently in the future, and that's why they're going to have to, for professional golf only, cut the ball back. We can't make the golf courses any longer. Financially, it costs too much. Fertilizer, water, which the world is running out of. Now, it's hard to tell people in this part of the world that the world is running out of water. But look at California and America and other places in America, never mind India and China and Africa, where they're having massive problems with water. So but I would like to just say, first of all, my heart goes out to all these people that are suffering from this corona disease. I mean, it really is so, so sad for people to see their parents and their grandparents or any member of their family getting sick and dying. And this is all over the world. But let me just say one word of encouragement, because one has got to think positive. It will go away. We shall overcome this. In 1968 and 70, if I remember correctly, and I'm 84, but there was a disease called the Hong Kong flu, and 1 million people died of it. 1 million. We've overcome it, and we will do it here. And I think the American government have done a fantastic job with this this corona. Imagine this. You know, they weren't prepared for it. People in the past had not really set up a preparation for it, which is quite sad. And I mean, you know, all of a sudden this comes upon you. It's not a very easy thing to handle, and I think they've done a fantastic job, and the people of America. This is why this is the greatest country in the world. People pull together in spite of their differences right now, which is a shame, the way they're fighting and telling lies and being nasty to each other. The thing is that America is resilient, and they're going to handle it well, and they're going to overcome it.
Yes, we can. And Gary, you've been around for 8 decades. You're 84. What lessons do you think we can learn during this time?
You know, the word I use all the time is love. You know, I've lived in some very difficult times. I lived in apartheid in South Africa. I lived in the apartheid in America. And, you know, it's just, I've seen some terrible things, having traveled more miles than any human being ever. The things that I've seen in India, you see the things that are happening in Iran. They just shoot 1,400 people at a demonstration. They put people in jail with us. So cruel. You see what in North Korea, what they do to people. You see the things that are happening in the world today. It just makes you realize how lucky you are. And you know, when I hear, you know, and I've traveled around the world and seen what socialism has done to the world. And honestly, when I hear young people and I hear people in government talking about that their new theme will be socialism, I just want to lie down and cry, because I've seen this. And the young people of America are very naive on world affairs. And when I hear them talking about socialism, they have no idea what they're talking about. And you think of this great word, freedom, that America has. Freedom is dying flat out in the world. There's only about, I'm going to take a guess, if the world has 50% of freedom left, it's a miracle. And look at the soldiers that went to Normandy. The Americans fought. And my brother went to war from South Africa at 17 to fight with the Americans. And my brother-in-law was killed. So, you know, we must really value this freedom and civil rights. It's terribly important, and to love each other. Yes, we can have a difference. My daughter and I differ on politics, but I adore her. We don't have to tell lies and fight each other and say terrible things. I mean, some people don't want to even talk to you anymore because you have a political view. It's crazy.
I know. I agree with you. I agree with you. And speaking of freedom, Gary Player, you are going to receive the Presidential Medal of Freedom with Annika Sorenstam. So congratulations on that. I know it was supposed to be last month you were going to get this, but obviously with COVID-19, it has been postponed. But that's a tremendous honor.
That's the greatest honor ever bestowed upon me in my life. And having won, you know, all the world tournaments and championships, I had a lot of great honors bestowed upon me in my career. But this is the ultimate, to be recognized by the greatest country in the world, is such an honor for me, and I just love America, and it's just something that, and my journey, you know, when I die, I don't want to be known as a great golfer. I want to be known as a man who contributed to society and his fellow man, and I've had a journey that has been so interesting, changing the lives of tens of thousands of people, building an AIDS center in China, building schools in South Africa, helping, well, just to give you an example, in America, in the early 50s, Charlie Sifford, the African-American golfer, wasn't allowed to play on the tour. And I went to bat for him, and I went to his hometown in Cleveland, and we became great friends. And when he was inducted into the Hall of Fame, would you believe it? He asked a white South African to induct him into the Hall of Fame. What an honor that was for me. And then Lee Elder came down to South Africa, the African-American golfer, at great difficulty put upon him here, great pressure not to go. And I had pressure in South Africa for him not to come. And I went to my prime minister at that time, who was a believer in apartheid. And I said to him, I want to put a spoke in the wheel of apartheid. I want to bring a black golfer from America to come and play in South Africa. I thought he's going to kick me out of his office. Isn't it sad to think in those days you had to get permission? And anyway, he agreed, and Lee Elder came down, and he played in our PGA, and we did other venues, and it was a great success. And Lee Elder and I have been great friends ever since. So it's nice to know that you're changing the lives of people. And my great dream is for this country, for the youth. And Winston Churchill, my all-time hero, said, the youth of a nation are the trustees of posterity. We've got to get the young people to be well-educated. You've got many places in the world that want to destroy America. And this is what should be instilled in these young people's minds. Keep fit, well-educated. Stop smoking and drinking and taking any weed whatsoever. You have a debt to society. You owe it to America. And this is my great, and to get them fit, young people live on phones now. Yes, you can have your phone, but there's a time you don't overdo it. You've got to channel your energies in the right direction. Get fit. Learn to eat properly. Keep your weight down. Gee whiz, you don't want to ever lose America. You've got to keep it number one. And I can say when you're number one, I've been number one in the world. It's a hard job to stay there. You look out throughout history, people have collapsed. The Roman Empire, the British Empire, nothing lasts forever unless you really work at it. And this is what these professors at universities should be talking to these children about. And they should bring exercise back in the schools. They've taken exercise out of the schools. Can you imagine that?
Terrible.
Taking exercise out? In South Africa, we have the best high schools in the world. You had to go to gym every day. All sporting facilities right at the schools, swimming pools, track, football fields. You've got to get young people to exercise. Exercise for longevity and for productivity. Exercise is absolutely imperative, and to get away from this obesity. Obesity is killing more people than the wars of the world. So there's a great desire for me to try and just play my part in a small way.
Everything you're saying is just incredible. I agree with everything that you've just said there, Gary. And were you born with this kind of work ethic and dedication for excellence, or did it develop through the years? I know you've said the harder you practice, the luckier you get. But where does this work ethic and this dedication and this commitment come from?
You know, and when I was a young boy of nine, my mother died, and I just adored my mother. She died of cancer, and my brother went to war at 17, as I told you. At the same time, basically, just before my mother died, my brother went to war. My father worked in a gold mine, 8,000 feet down in the ground. It's a terrible life at that time. There was no air conditioning down there, and the facilities they have today. So anytime anybody wears any gold, they should really appreciate it. And my sister was at boarding school. I traveled an hour and a half to school, an hour and a half back, got home. The house was dark and empty. I had to make my own food, make my own bed. I lay in bed at night crying, wishing I was dead, which was the greatest gift that I ever had. Adversity is a gift. It's not a dreaded thing. It's a gift, because everybody in life has adversity of some time or other. It doesn't matter who you are, and it's not 90% what happens to you. It's 10% what happens to you, and 90% how you react to it. And to never think you're the only one who's having it, because everybody's getting it. And so I really had, maybe their children in Syria where their houses have been built, bombed, and places in the world, in India where they don't have much, or Africa, or China, or any country that you can think of where people are really struggling. And so mine maybe is not as bad as that, but it was very, very bad, and that helped me to have this philosophy. And having traveled, and I like to read, I like to learn, I like to ask people. I've been around every president of America for the last 60-something years. I met the emirs in the Middle East, the prime ministers of the world, royal family, but also in the villages of Africa and India where the people are so poor, and I learned as much from them as I learned from the higher echelon. So it's been an incredible journey that I've had.
And, you know, your autobiography came out in 91, and I love this quote. You said, "I am an animal when it comes to achievement and wanting success. There is never enough success for me."
Well, absolutely. You know, in English, we have a great saying, if you want something badly enough, you'll get it. And the thing is that I'm trying to instill this into my little granddaughter here. Now, she is a fantastic gymnastic person. She's always doing cartwheels and flip flacks, backward somersaults, and she's so good. And I said to her, you know, you can be an Olympic Games representative for your great country, America, here. Oh, she says, I'm not good enough. And I'm trying to get that positive attitude into her. It's terribly important. But how do you know, when you see her, she has a beautiful school, she has wonderful parents, she has 3 meals a day. She has a bus waiting to take her to school. She has clothes. She has TV. She has a wonderful bedroom. How do you compete? It's very hard to compete against somebody in China or Russia or Africa when they don't have anything, some of these kids. Some of these kids have nothing. I went to do a golf clinic the other day for some youngsters in Philly here. And the coach said to me, Gary, please lay it on them. Tell them the truth, because if I do it, the parents say I'm being a bully, or the dean complains about it. So I went there and I said to the kids, who wants to be? I said, good morning, guys. I'm here because I love you and I want to help you. And I said, who wants to be a pro? And they all put up their hands and said, oh, I want to be a pro. I said, you little fat pigs, you got no chance. And they all got such a shock when I said that, their eyes opened like a saucer. They said, why not? I said, well, while you are having breakfast and your mother's brought it to the table for you, for a little darling, and you've got a bus waiting for you, and some of you have a car waiting for you, and you have TV and food and a roof over your head. I said, some people in the world don't have one of those things, not even one. And so while you're having your breakfast, they've already practiced for an hour, and they're being to the gym, and they have a determination and a hunger and a passion. And I'll tell you a statement that has never been used on any TV station ever in the history of America. It's called fixity of purpose. Fixity of purpose. That's Winston Churchill saying. That means you have to have a passion, a desire to achieve something. What made America this great country? It was a passion. It was family. It was hard work. And it was faith. Is this continuing to the degree it should do? In my opinion, it's only my opinion now. People will criticize you for saying things, but I can accept criticism. Can you imagine? Imagine being the president of America who tries his best. All the presidents try their best. And the day you become president, the next day, 49% of people don't like you. And the criticism they take, they dedicate their lives, and all they do every single day is get criticized to the hilt. Man, I wouldn't like to have that job. I don't know about you.
I know. It's a no-win situation. Real quick, because we have like a minute left. Only 5 golfers have won all 4 golf majors at any time during their careers. And as I said earlier, you're one of those 5. Who's going to be next? I know Phil Mickelson is missing a U.S. Open. Rory is missing a Masters. Jordan Spieth needs a PGA Championship. Who do you think is going to be the next player to win a career Grand Slam?
I think Rory McIlroy, because if you look at it, he has the best golf swing. He has the best basics. in the swing. But that doesn't mean to say he's going to do it. It's not the swing that wins. It's the mind and the great putting. But if Jordan Spieth could get his swing right, he's got quite a few faults in his swing, he would do it because he has got the best short game in the world. He's a very charismatic guy, a wonderful young man, and I'd love to see him do it. I'd love to see Rory do it. I think one of them are going to do it. But Rory at this stage, to me, has the best chance. And Augusta absolutely suits his game.
I can't wait to see you. I'll see you at the Masters in November, right?
Yes. Will you say hello to me, please?
Definitely. You'll be on the first tee, hitting that honorary tee shot, wanting to outdrive Jack Nicklaus, right?
Not wanting to, doing it. Jack, every year Jack says, you know, it really irritates me, you're out-hitting me. I said, Jack, you out-hit me for 40 years. I'm going to the gym like crazy and you're not. What do you expect?
I love it. There are
He's my best friend and the greatest gentleman I ever played golf with.
Gary, you are a true gentleman and a great ambassador. I have a million other questions I want to ask you. We'll have to have you on again, okay?
Okay, thank you, and God bless America.
Thanks so much, the great Gary Player. My thanks to the great Gary Player, Jerry Cooney, and Kyle Lynch in the studio. Stay safe, stay active, stay well. I'll talk to you next Saturday morning right here on Sports Interview with Ann LaGorrie.